Live from Tehran in Iran, you're watching Press TV. We're going to take you live to the speech made by leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
I would like to offer felicitations on the auspicious feast of sacrifice. That's a great historical event marked by all the faithful and believers across the world. Congratulations to the great Iranian people, the entire Muslims, and also followers of the Ibrahimi divine faiths. The memory of the Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice, is a great memory. Basically, the first 10 days of the lunar months of Zihajj is replete with memories. You know, the months of the lunar months of Zihajj, every 10 days of it has its own special specificities. The first 10 days is the period of magnificent and glorious memories from which lessons could be drawn. And also it's a period for supplication and worshiping and repenting to the Almighty God. You know, memories are related to Prophet Moses. It starts there from Prophet Moses. The which means that that's 40 nights that Moses met and got reunited with his God. And it's interpreted that the 40 nights starts from the first night of Zihajj until the Eid al-Adha. It's for a period of 40 days. Now, it was first 30 days, and then 10 more days are added. That's the Zihajj lunar months. It shows the significance of these days and nights. The sufferings that Moses went through are there for everyone, you know, to know. The Prophet Moses went through lots of sufferings in Egypt. He had this problem and issues with the Pharaoh, and there were lots, heaps of issues and problems that when he returned from Midian, when he left Egypt, he went through lots of sufferings and problems. They came from Pharaoh with his tribe, and then after all of those issues and after the great miracle that he made, I mean, dividing the seawater and their enemies, got sunk with all their forces. This means a strong faith that had to be created in that tribe. But that didn't happen. First they said that they were seeking polygamy, and they wanted to turn to idols and worshiping the idols. And that's what happened in the early stages. And then came the cow. They all happened in the 40 days period. I mean, the many Israelite children of Israel, the Jews at that time, that's what they did. And when he came back from the trip, he saw that things have changed, and that was a great suffering for a prophet, for a messenger of God. With all the sufferings he went through, he invited a lot of people to have faith in God, and then all of a sudden something trivial happens and they change their mind. That's what is also mentioned in the Holy Quran, that the prophet got really furious when he witnessed that situation. He got enraged and he was regretful. In the Holy Quran, there are two mentioned, a couple of mentions, as just said in Arabic, that the Jews created problems for Prophet Moses. And elsewhere in the Holy Book also it says that the Jews also made him suffer a lot. It shows that Prophet Moses, you know, suffered a lot at the hands of his tribe. So these 10 nights are reminiscent of these great historical facts, and that indicates that movement on the path of righteousness, given all the miracle, like the great miracle that Prophet Moses had, he still faced great predicaments and problems, and that's reminiscent of that event. And then we have the issue of the day of Arafah. It's the day of worship and prayers. It's the pinnacle of worshiping God. And Imam Sadiq is quoted as saying that my father, that's Imam Bagher, on the day of Arafah, on the plains of Arafat, in sizzling hot weather, he went on fasting at that time, and he would pray to God, and he would, in very hot weather, on the Arafat plain. And Imam Hussein's also prayers, everyone knows about that. And also we have the Sahih Sajjadi, the book by Imam Hussein's son, special prayers in there. They're all related to the day of Arafat. It was yesterday, and hopefully the Iranian people have made best use of that opportunity for special prayers. And then comes the Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice. It's really a great and amazing event. It's unprecedented in history. We have Prophet Abraham, who is told to sacrifice his own teenage son. That's an ordeal commissioned to him by God. Then, and he was waiting for long years to be able to have a son. And then in old age, God gave him the son. So it's clear when you have a child that in the final years of your life, you see how lovely you, how much love you have for that kind of a child. And then when he was just a younger, a teenage boy, then the God ordered him to sacrifice him. You see, these are really strange and amazing incidents that happen in the history of faith, religion, and in Islam. This is what we have had in our presidents. They are all recorded. You know, an aging father who is ready to sacrifice his own son because he's ordered by God. And also the young boy also says, I'm here, I'm patient, I will give up, and I will try to tolerate it because God has ordered it. So this is what we remember regarding the Feast of Sacrifice, Eid al-Adha. So this is the first 10 days when you have these all these magnificent and glorious and meaningful and informative events happening. Now the second 10 days of the lunar month of Zihajjah is related to the rule of Islamic rulers, the Imam, the Qadir event, for instance. From all it has a very superior position because it guarantees and it supports all the divine injunctions, you know, the Qadir event and all those important events that happened. Now, the 10 days, again, we have some important events, the most important one of which being the issue of Mubahila, as it is called in Arabic. Then we have, again, the issue of monotheism. That means the prophet was at that time discussing issues with Najran Christians. They were discussing Jesus Christ, and they said that Muhammad said that Jesus is a servant of God, created by God, and they said otherwise. So they had to then, you know, you have heard about the issue of Mubadala, and they had to retreat. So hopefully this is an auspicious day for you, and you have had the best of time in the first 10 days. And the next 10-day period is hopefully as God wishes and pleases. Hopefully you will go experience those days as well. So one of things that makes me happy has always been meeting with public. This is one of the things that I'm really interested in, and it's really attractive for me, you know, to be able to meet with the people. I talk to them, I hear them speak, and there are different strata of the people that I meet with. So this enemy that I'm in, the coronavirus, it's really and nothing, but at the same time, it's highly dangerous. It has prevented us from doing lots of things that we wish to do. So we were supposed to, you know, because we are not able to meet people in person, so what we are doing now, we're supposed to actually address the health workers and all the people at the health sector. We're going to have a meeting with them through a video conference. Well, a number of them had to get together at a certain place, and then said there is this ratification by the task force on fighting the coronavirus that says not more than 10 people are allowed to gather in one place. So we canceled that, and now we're holding this meeting from far away and through video conference. We're talking to respected people. So a number of issues I want to raise. The first one being the issue of services offered, the great things that have been conducted, those who are actually struggling on the path of the providing and protecting people's health. Now, today, the whole world is facing a pandemic. It is not limited to one certain locale. It's the whole planet that's facing this problem. Now, maybe some people more and some less. Maybe in a large number of places, there are people from among the public who also offer some assistance and help to those afflicted. But I don't think nowhere on earth could you find any place like in the early Iran, where you see the number of people who voluntarily offer such assistance to people in need. You don't see such a huge number of people anywhere apart from Iran. At least I haven't heard of anyone. I have no report at hand to hear that anywhere in the world you could see such a large number of people, you know, crowds of people and their support for the people who need it. This is part of the characteristics of the people, both in natural disasters, floods, earthquakes, and also when things happen, when a war is imposed, and the eight-year imposed war, we also had the same huge crowds of people and their sacrifices they made that created this great epic. And the battlefronts were conducted and managed in such an efficient way, and that's an outstanding juncture of time in our history. Now, today, the same thing is seen. I mean, the health workers in the health sector, they were standing at the very forefront, at the front line. I mean, doctors, nurses, other health workers, they really made sacrifices. I mean, words fail to talk about how significant their work has been. And then we had also had some volunteers who pitched in, and in the health sector, they also joined hands, and they did whatever they could. I mean, it's not only specialists, there were also some other people that they did whatever they could. They underwent some training, and they offered great services. And now, considering the climax and peak of this disease, again, the same support needs to be perpetuated. There is another issue, and that's assistance, and a number of people in the midst of all this were really hurt. Of course, the majority of people, I mean, in terms of business, in terms of income, you know, and earning a living, most people face problems. However, not all of them faced serious problem, but we had some people, a number of people who really encountered serious issues. Well, this needs to be compensated. Who can make it for them? And people, not the government, is not able to do all of that. Of course, government officials and authorities and semi-government institutions have their own responsibilities and functions, and they are doing it, and we are informed that they are doing their job. But that's not sufficient. The entire public, again, like the same way they acted on the threshold of the fasting months of Ramadan, with the same people that people acted, they should offer their assistance in the same way they did at that period. So this is what the Holy Quran says in several points that we have in the Holy Quran, that says you should rush to offer assistance and charity work. It's always recommended, that means, to be among good worshippers and servants of God. You need to be such people. I mean, you should, it's just like you should compete with each other, actually. That means there should be a competition in offering aid and charity work. You should try to compete with each other. I mean, you gotta try to leave others behind in doing such work. And this is really what matters. Even during the months of morning months of Muharram, also there are some religious centers, some individuals who can afford it, and they offer food. That can be done also in within this same context, to offer assistance to certain households, and by observing the health protocols, they could also offer food within the same context. This is really a revolutionary characteristic. This is part and parcel of being a revolutionary. It's not only by words, and then deeds that should go further than words. It's your action that matters. So people are active in this arena. They're really revolutionaries. Of course, there's some people who may not be prepared. I mean, not everyone is able. I mean, or maybe not everyone is able to afford and offer great services. Still, when they see that there are people who are at the forefront and they're doing their job so excitedly, so they also feel that they got to do something. So they also find something for them to be able to do, and they also pitch in. Last year, in Khuzestan flood, we had Mahdi Soleimani, Abu Mahdi Mohandes. Both of them were right at the forefront. Both of these martyrs were there to help the flood-stricken people, and they joined the two, the borders, the Iraq-Iran border, Abu Mahdi. From the other side of the Iranian border, the possibilities that Khuzestan in Iran needed, he brought some supplies from Iraq, from the city of Basra, to Iran's Khuzestan province. That was a great assistance. That was, I mean, the presence of these two great personalities, the shining stars of the struggle field. You know, lots of people, both on the both sides of the border, they offered assistance. Of course, at that time, our people also went through this ordeal, both in Khuzestan province and elsewhere. From all over places, they rushed and they offered help. Now, the animosity against the Iranian people is not as high. When there is lots of antagonism, then cooperation should also increase. Further efforts need to be made. When you have the enemy attacking you, then you need to mobilize your forces and concentrate and be able to work. That's how things are now. Now, I will explain about the enemy later on, that the enemies are trying to bother the Iranian people and put them in trouble, like the Bani Israel, the Jews at the time of Prophet Moses bothered Prophet Abraham. Part of our enemies also from among the Bani Israel. So they also, their followers, they want to help. They want to bother others and put trouble put them into trouble. So we need to mobilize our forces. We need to join hands. We need to make efforts and to work together, just like the days of the eight-year Saddam Post war in Iran. Of course, one of the things that could be done is scientific work. That's really of the essence. I'm informed in various fields, the scientific work is being pursued and followed seriously to identify and learn more about the virus and try to be able to come up with a way of prevention of the virus in order to be able to find some medication to be able to cure this. So lots of scientific work is being conducted, and I'm informed about it. And what's being done, it's per se, it's got its own blessings and advantages. You know, the important things that will occur naturally. I mean, this time of the war, it was the same thing. Let's say, for instance, Martyr Bavari was a youngster who was working on a newspaper, and he was doing his daily routine, work. When he found his way to the battlefronts, then he turned into a big military commander, and he was designing military operations. I mean, he had the talent and just emerged and came to the fore when he was put in that situation. Now, people are doing research work when they step into this field, they turn to some outstanding researchers and the scholars who are able to pull off great successes and make achievements. So that was the issue of services. Now, the next issue is the issue of sanctions. Well, the sanction as imposed against the Iranian people by Americans definitely is a crime, no doubt about it. It is a big crime that they are committing against the whole nation. I mean, it looks on the surface that they are doing this against the Islamic establishment, but in fact it's against all ordinary Iranian citizens. That's what they're doing. Now, regarding this, I have a number of points to mention. Now, one being that what are they following? What are they trying to achieve? They have this midterm, long-term, and short-term objective, and the sideline one. The short-term one is that they want to bring the people to their knees. They want them to lose their patience. They want them to be fatigued and weary, and they want them to stand against the Islamic Islam. That's the first design that they have, and that they want to apply so much pressure so that the people really get nervous and stand against the Islamic establishment and the government. That's their short-term goal. So you see that last year they said, the year before they said, also this year they are saying that we have a hot summer. By hot it means people should go and out and stand against the government, and now they are facing the same issue at home. This is their short-term plan. Now, the midterm plan that they are following is that by these sanctions, they want to check the progress and advancement of the nation. It's mostly scientific, I mean. They have mentioned these, they have uttered these. These are not speculations. It's not my interpretation. It's the statements and comments that they are making, be it politicians or those working in think tanks and other institutions. This is what they have uttered. That's another goal, which is by means of sanctions, they create certain restrictions so that the country is not able to make progress, especially on the scientific front. Even the assassinations that were made, I mean, the nuclear scientists that were assassinated, they also mentioned and asserted it was because they wanted to check the scientific progress of Iran and try to postpone that. And that's their midterm design. And then the long-term goal is to make the country go bankrupt. That's the bankruptcy of the Iranian government. They want to see the Iranian economy collapse and go down in pieces. If an economy in the country is totally shattered and is in shambles, then it cannot survive. That's their ultimate goal. that they're planning to achieve. And there's also the sidelined and marginal goal, and that they want the relations between Iran and the resistance forces, the relations between the two sides, to be cut. Because they know whatever the Islamic Republic of Iran could help us to the best of its ability, so they want to stop this. These are the goals that the enemy is pursuing. That's what they have entered them into. They want to do this, but this is pipe dream, and this is a Persian proverb saying it will never happen. It's only a pipe dream. They have this short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals to achieve, but thank God they have failed. Of course, yes, sanctions have created problems, no doubt about it. All the problems are not related to sanctions. Part of them, it's because of our own shortcomings, our mismanagement also. And also recently, some of them relate to the coronavirus. Some of them also relate to sanctions. Yes, people are facing problems. And I will talk about that further. There are problems on the ground, but what they wanted to do has not happened, and it will not happen. I mean, what they are pursuing, what they had on their mind, they've never been able to achieve it. And that was only a nightmare that they have faced. Their dream has not come true. Of course, when you see that the dream has not come true, the very same fact and their failure in achieving their goals, this is exactly what they are admitting. Lots of news and reports that you receive from the West, from Europe, from America, you see all in those media reports that there are people, think tanks and others, especially, they are making confessions. They are admitting that maximum pressure campaign and the sanctions have not reached their ultimate goal, and they have not been able to do what they wanted to do against Iran. That's the first one. Therefore, the sanctions have been crimes that followed those goals, but the enemy, thank God, have not been able to achieve those goals and won't. Now, the second point is, in parallel with the sanctions, if you pay attention to this, please, there is also they're trying to distract maybe people's opinions, or let's say it's to distort facts. Let's say they want to actually distort the facts and truth between Iran or whatever related to Iran. They're trying to distort all those facts. So that's one of the things that they're doing. Now, the goal behind this distortion, they're following two goals. One of them being dealing a blow to the people's morale. Now, I'll explain how they want to do it. That's being one point. And then the other one is to show the wrong directions how to actually tackle the sanctions. This is the distortion that they're making. Now, they're also spending colossal amounts of money in order to distort those facts and realities. And now you can see that their leaders, their ministers, heads of organizations, they are taken to the extremes. You know, they do whatever they can. They make statements against Iran. They travel here and there. And wherever they go, they kind of relate things to Iran. They're trying their best. And this is what they're trying to do in line with that distortion that I mentioned. But as for the first issue that was trying to weaken people's morale and high spirits, they want to undermine, you know, the zeal and excitement and fervor that people have. This has been there since the very early days of the Islamic Revolution. That was the first fixed policy of the Iranian, the enemy, that they addressed the Iranian people through radio and television. At that time, it was more limited. Now we have much more. All, you know, a host of different kinds of media, social media also on top of it. So they're trying to tell the Iranian people that you are miserable, you have put yourself in a great misery, and it's the end of the world for you, and then you cannot do nothing, nobody can do nothing for you, and you are in a terrible situation. Since day one of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, first, you know, in the early days, they didn't know what had happened. They were flabbergasted, and then when they came to their senses, they tried to tell the Iranian people and inculcate in their minds that by severing ties with the United States and by actually severing the bond between the colonial Iran during the Pahlavi regime with the U.S., that the people of Iran are facing a great disaster and they're in terrible situation. That's what they have been pushing for, and they're trying to overplay the situation and the severity of the situation in different ways, in all different ways. If there is any point of strength in the country, they totally ignore it. They close their eyes. Absolutely. They either keep silent about it or they simply just ignore it. There have been lots of great things that have been conducted in the country. They absolutely don't mention one single of them in the propaganda of our enemies. If there is a point of weakness, then they aggrandize it 10 times, multiple times, 100 times. They want to overplay it. And why do they do it? Because they want to weaken people's morale. They wanted people to lose hope, especially the youngsters. They want them to lose hope. If we have young, hopeful people, then they move forward and they run at the forefront. They make headway. If they are hopeful, if they are hopeless, they just stop. They grind to a halt, just like a car that runs out of fuel. That's what they're trying to do. They want to discourage our young people. They don't want them to work actively. They want them to lose hope so that their youngsters won't be able to make a headway and progress. That's what they're trying to do. And of course, it works. And some people, and inside the country, you also see that some people are also doing the same thing and they're following the same line. You hear them say the same things. I mean, make the same statements. Suppose there is this news that it's written somewhere, some statements made by a certain individual among a political party. Then you hear them say something. And then a couple of days later, you see on social media or in newspapers, you see that in Iran, they also echo the same statements. Unfortunately, this is what's happening. Now, the second point that I mentioned, giving the wrong directions, this is how they do it. They say, if you want the sanctions removed, then you should bow to the U.S. You should give up. You got to surrender. You shouldn't resist against the U.S. Of course, regarding this, I will offer some more explanation. So that was the issue of distortion. Of course, I should mention the fact that, yes, some people are affected by this. They repeat and echo whatever they say, the statements they make, be it regarding the points of weakness of the country. They try to aggrandize and overplay them. And also regarding the undermining of the points of strength, the great things that have been conducted, and also distorting the facts. It works on some people. Some people get affected. But the majority, the bulk of the population in Iran, well, that doesn't work on them. They know who America is. They know about the enemy. They know that they're lying. They know that they have ill intention behind this. So this issue of distortion that I just mentioned, that has not also achieved its results. And I'm telling you now, if this distortion thing fails, and then sanctions will definitely fail. And it's because this is a battlefront of wills. When you have distortion project that fails, but you see Iran is standing strong, definitely they will also prevail the enemy and be victorious. And that's the second point. Not a third point. Well, without a doubt, sanctions are crimes committed by the U.S. It's a blow that the U.S. has dealt on the Iranians. But Iranians, if they're smart and vigilant, they have made the best use of that. I mean, they have done certain things, and to the great dismay of the enemy, and the opposite has happened. So they are using the people, you know, our youngsters, our scientists, our authorities, the political, social activists. They have used the sanction as a lever in order to kind of kill our people have used this as a tool in order to augment their self-confidence. Some of the secondary sanctions, you know, by secondary sanctions, I mean the U.S. Dictates the whole countries in the world, all firms and corporations, individuals, that you have no right to give Iran the commodities it needs, for instance. Well, this naturally, what we need to import from outside, we cannot get access to that. Well, that has caused some people inside Iran on several occasions, it's not only one or two instances, hundreds of instances, when they saw that they have no access to outside of Iran, they tried to produce things locally and domestically. So, let's say, for example, we needed an educational training jet. We required this for our armed forces. They didn't sell that thing to us. So what did we do? So we had this advanced educational Corsair, actually, jet that we domestically built. If they had sold us that, then today we wouldn't have the production of Corsair jets inside Iran. Or let's say lots of machineries that we have, you know, our plants and factories needed parts and components, and the enemy placed sanctions on them. They didn't allow those components and parts to arrive in Iran. First, they said that those that have dual purposes cannot go in. Maybe they could use militarily or in a civilian way. And then they generalized the whole thing, you know, the whole commodities. So we had this big movement, something like an uprising, to make parts and components, various, you know, a myriad of whatever parts and components you need for missionaries in Iran. If they had provided us with those equipment, nobody would think of producing them. Well, they simply bought it from outside of Iran. When there is no way to buy from outside of borders, then they go to universities, they go to research centers, and they ask them to do something, and they try, and they finally produce what they need. So the sanctions, we have taken advantage of the sanctions, and with the assistance of the Almighty God, we have made best use of it at the service of bringing a boom to our science and technological advancement. And that was the third point. Now, as for the fourth point, we said that the sanctions did not work. I mean, they could not achieve their desired objectives. Now, why is that? But the reason is the important things that we have done inside the country under the sanctions. Let's say thousands of science-based companies and firms came to be in Iran. That's a great thing. It shows that this scientific move and drive is moving ahead more strongly. Before these sanctions, we didn't have several thousand science-based companies. Or let's say, for example, the Persian Gulf Star refinery that the IRGC created. It's a huge project that the IRGC conducted. It happened under the sanctions, despite the existence of the sanctions. That's what happened. And to their surprise, I mean, the people in the world to see that happen. And also, there were also some other great things that were done in the military, for instance, or in the Salpars gas field, you know, it's a huge area for gas reserves. They have done again, they have performed great projects while being under the sanctions. Or let's say there are also some huge projects in Khuzestan and Ilam provinces. They're trying to revive land there. I don't know how much people are informed about this, how much have been publicized. Great, great projects have been performed in order to kind of revive and bring to life the land that need water and irrigation and drainage in Ilam and Khuzestan, mainly in Khuzestan province and part in Ilam province. There were lots of land that are now being put to best use. And they all happened under the sanctions. Also, we have the power ministry, that would big projects, both in terms of water and in terms of electricity. And also, we have the Ministry of Road and Transportation. They have also had their own projects. And also, we have this amazing military achievements and production. It's really amazing. I mean, those themselves, they have also admitted that under the sanctions, Iran has been able to have such productions in terms of defense. So, in my opinion, one of the things that you could also add to this list is the trying to separate the economy from oil and make it independent. This is a very difficult thing to do, and for long years, for different governments and establishments, I've always given them warning. But naturally, it's happened now. But they don't buy much of our oil. They buy a little part of our oil. We don't have our previous customers. So it has caused the economy in the country to kind of detach itself and its bond with the oil, which was really harmful. That bond and that dependence has really diminished. Hopefully we can go. When I say oil, I mean crude. The oil that has added value inside the country and derivatives are exported. I have nothing against that. What I'm talking about, what I'm insisting, is the export of crude oil. And we're hopeful that by the follow-up work of the parliament and the government, this could happen. And there are lots of capacities in Iran, and they could replace oil. And the problem we have in our budget could be tackled that way. Now, as for the fifth point, there's a question. Is the sanction, can we do something about sanctions? Yes, definitely we can do something as a remedy. The second answer is definitely this remedy does not mean that we should withdraw against the U.S. This is how some people argue. And they're talking about us, that if you want to stop the U.S. expansionism or bullying, you should withdraw or pull back. Naturally, when you pull back, the one who is making aggression against you is asking too much. If you pull back, they will advance, and they will ask for more. So you pull back and accept Americans' demands and bow, they will raise more demands. So that's what America is saying to us today. They say your nuclear program should scrap it altogether. Your defense and military projects, you got to cut it down to one-tenth. That means all the missiles and defense capability that we have. This itself is deterrent, per se. They said, just do away with that. I mean, make yourself defenseless. And then your regional influence, again, you got to do away with that. So we have this strategic influence in our region. There are many nations and governments in the region that support us, and they are interested in us, and they are ready to actually help us and serve our purposes. They say that you got to do away with this. Is what the U.S. is asking us to do. To do away with these doesn't mean that the U.S. would pull back. When you are ready to cut down on your defense capability, when you are ready to also destroy your regional influence and clout, when you're ready to do some, nuclear project is vital for the country, when you're ready to dispense with it, it's not enough for them. They will ask for more. They will never stop asking you to do things. They make more demands. So a wise person would never do it. I mean, to make the aggressor, the pushing aggressor, to stop, you shouldn't listen to their demands. Well, regarding the nuclear saga, a number of people, unfortunately, are affected by the enemy statements. They, what's in it for us, I mean, this nuclear project? And sometimes these are written in our newspapers. It's a requisite of our country in future. We need 20,000, 30,000 megawatts of electricity to be generated by nuclear power plants for the next few years. We cannot provide it in any other way, or it's not economical, let's say. So when we need this, what are we going to do when we need that? Who should we go to? I mean, should we ask the U.S.? Should we ask Europe? Should we beg them to give us nuclear-generated power or do the enrichment for it? Will they do it for us? So today we got to think of tomorrow. These are the requirements that cannot be provided to cater for in 6 months, 1 year, 2 years. You need to make arrangements beforehand. So that's what we have set the stage where we have paved the ground and make arrangements. And within the JCPOA, we have made big losses. But the whole thing is not harmed. I mean, lots of things have been done, and the enemy doesn't want to see this when it comes to defensive and missile also purposes the same thing. When Americans say, let's have negotiation, they want to negotiate over the same things. I mean, they say, let's, please, if you bear this in mind, I've mentioned this several times, but if you pay special attention, I have to say it again, I have to repeat it, because maybe some people don't understand it, or maybe they pretend they don't understand it. So I'm repeating it again. When the enemy says, let's negotiate, this is what it means. That means let's, for instance, sit at a negotiating table, we tell you that you must stop making missiles, and you have to accept it. If you accept it, okay, that means that's the end of you. That means you have taken away all your defenses. If you haven't accepted it, we'll go on with the same thing. We'll have sanctions, we'll have threats against you. This is what they mean by negotiation. That's why I said we will not negotiate with the U.S. That's why I'm saying I'm against negotiations with the U.S. Of course, they benefit from negotiations. I mean, the old man who is at the helm in the U.S., you know, looks like that to have negotiations with North Korea, he is kind of used it in a propaganda way. I mean, he can use it as a propaganda ploy for election, for re-election. He's taken advantage of it. But when you go beyond that, it's the political system in the U.S., and they say they're targeting vital issues regarding Iran. I mean, they're saying that your defensive military purpose, you got to do away with that, your regional clout and influence, you got to dispense with that, your national might, you got to do away with it. You cannot do that. I mean, which wise, noble human being would ever do that? I mean, these are national interests. I mean, you could never accept it. That's what they mean by negotiation. That's why I'm against negotiations. All over the world, apart from the U.S. and the fabricated Zionist regime, we are ready to have talks. We have interactions. We sit at a negotiating table. We talk to them. No problem with that. But with the U.S., that's a different story. So the sanctions, there could be a remedy for sanctions, definitely, but the remedy is not pulling back, is not withdrawal. So what's the remedy? The remedy for the sanctions is only and only relying on our own national capabilities. These capacities and capabilities, whatever we have, we've got to stick to them, and we got to try to explore further capabilities, and definitely we have more capacities, and we got to rely on them, we got to revive them, we got to build up on them. Our youth need to be further involved, the economy of resistance or resilience, that means indigenously producing. We have our own capacities inside, we have also some international possibilities. So inside the country, domestically, we can embark on production, and we can do this on the basis of different facilities that we have, be it scientific, economic, etc. At the same time, globally, we can also we have good friends, and we can work with them. It needs a struggle, it needs efforts, and the resistance economy we have in indigenous production, and also interaction with the outside. And in both areas, we have our own possibilities. We can work. We have great and huge capacities, and the further ahead we move, the more capacities are created. Of course, it needs a jihadi-style management, prudence, and wisdom. Of course, we have friends who have effective roles in different parts of the world. Of course, our friendly governments, we're not going to rely on them. No, we're relying on the Almighty God and ourselves. If we don't have powerful friends, even if we don't have powerful friends, we do our own job. I mean, we'll move forward. During the war, we had the East Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc, they both stood against us. We had the former Soviet Union at that time that were opposing us and antagonizing us, and the U.S. and Europeans at that time. So without relying on them, we were able to resist for 8 years, and we defeated the enemy. Saddam, we brought him to his knees. This is what we were able to do. We're relying on God and on ourselves. So, but we'll also make maximum use of the possibilities of our friends. And you should also know the fact that depending on domestic possibilities and facilities, you know, this is there are some enemies, some opposing, some of them inside the country, ill-wishers inside, and some outside of the border enemies, like those who care about their own interests, because through imports they could have some profit. They're ready to buy something that can be produced inside the country. They want the. They're doing this to harm the economy. This is treason against the country when something can be produced inside the country. Why do you buy it outside of Iran? So that's why I'm recommending. Still, you see that in some areas, something is being produced inside the country, and there is good quality production inside. But at the same time, they import it from outside of the borders. And then the poor owner of the Iranian industry that's making investment and making good production, they cannot sell their commodities. This shouldn't be done. This is what's being done inside the country. And since old days, you know, this is what has been done. If you remember that Amir Kabir, 150, 60 years ago, he was the person who planned to make Iranian capabilities independent from others. The way the British Embassy, through its treacherous designs, you know, they tried to incite and make provocations. They made the King Nasser to remove him from premiership and then kill him. This is what the British conspired to do and did. In the nationalization of the oil, the same saga. Also, the Iranian people wanted to stand on their own feet, and you see what happened during the 28th of Mordad and what the U.S. and the U.K. did. And after the Islamic Revolution, again, openly, they're making objection to opposition. So you should be careful. This is the very same enemy. So, and you should also not rely on their promises. Again, I'm stressing this. 2 years ago, in the early days, when the U.S. had left the JCPOA, we said that the Europeans should do this and should do that, and said, okay, we'll do it if you wait for 3-4 months. We'll do that. And then said the 4 months passed, and then said 5 months, 6 months, and then they dragged their feet. That means that our economy, they made it contingent. They made it contingent upon other factors. I mean, our investor, our tradesmen, they were waiting. All those in active and economic enterprise, they were waiting to see if the Europeans will do something. And that's really harmful to the country's economy. You shouldn't trust their promises, that they make violations. They just keep you waiting for actions. This is not the right thing to do. We got to do our own job. We shouldn't wait for them. And the Europeans practically did nothing. Well, the last thing they did, they made this stupid thing called Instex, which of course didn't materialize so far. So in a nutshell, Instex means that Iran should give the Europeans, like French and English people, the money, and they could buy whatever they deem necessary and then send to Iran. This is what Instex means. This is something harmful. This is a wrong thing. And of course, they haven't done that either. The solution to the sanctions is to activate domestic capacities. It needs a struggle, it needs efforts. Now, as for the economic issues, I should also say that in terms of subsistence, the public is facing problems. Some households are facing problems. People are facing issues. We have high prices and inflation. They need to be addressed. Now, what needs to be done? Of course, in the meetings and private meetings, we have told the officials and give them the message. I've also spoken to the president. And some other officials have also talked to them. And I've asked them to do certain things. I'm stressing here again for the authorities to take heed of. So as for, let's say, economic issues, it's partly related to the urgent requirements, and some of them have to do with maybe midterm or long-term requirements. As for the urgent issues, actually, it means trying to bring the prices under control. Efforts need to be made. I mean, economists believe that this is possible. I mean, those who are active in this area, they believe that something can be done about the prices. Sometimes it's because of shortage of commodities, but at times we have no shortage of commodities. We have lots of them in stores and warehouses, but they're not offering them. This needs to be addressed by relevant organizations and bodies. They're usually government organizations. The judiciary can also help if necessary. And that's one issue, market stability, you know, that hoarding should be tackled. The prices cannot go up every day and fluctuate. And then the national currency, the value needs to be also maintained. The foreign exchange cannot go higher and higher every single day. That's a terrible thing. So this is part of the short-term activities that need to be done. Of course, I know the Central Bank of Iran is trying its best, and hopefully it will succeed. I have received reports from reliable sources that this has security and political issues more than economic ones. I mean, it doesn't mean, I'm not saying that there is no economic reason, but there are also security-related and politically-related reasons. This should be dealt with and addressed. I mean, there are people who are trying to fanning the flames. Another point, which is also really necessary to address, and experts and specialists in relevant organizations find this plausible, and that is actually to guide and to lead to the cash flow toward production. In the Idul Fitr special Paris 2 years ago, I mentioned this, that cash flow and liquidity for a country, you got to be careful, it could be a harm to our economy, but it can be made to put to best use. You can instruct it toward and channel it toward production. It will be beneficial that way and profitable. And experts say that this is possible. Therefore, it needs planning, it needs follow-up work, hopefully, that need to be conducted. And another point is removing the obstacles in the jump and the surge that we need in the production. That's what we named as the slogan for this year. There's certain obstacles in the way. Well, I've been recommended, and this is the recommendation I have received, and I'm telling you about it. The heads of the three branches of the government need to do this, and it's been proposed that a special working group could be formed by the heads of the three powers of the establishment. It could represent the economic, actually, aspect of the job. They got to go identify those problems and issues and try to address them. They could raise this in their meetings, and they should come to a conclusion. And they need to follow this seriously to be able to remove whatever obstacle in the way of a jump in production. Maybe one of them is that issue of the import that I told you with no reason. These are the things that need to be done in a short term, and they should be high on the agenda, and they should have priority in all the bodies, government, NGOs, semi-government NGOs. They all need to join hands to do this. Of course, there's some basic reforms that need to be made. 2 years ago, probably, we announced that to the meeting of the Economic Council of the heads of the three branches of the government, one of them being the correcting the budget structure, that's really important, correcting the banking system and operations, and also promotion of investment and employment. Since ages ago, of course, unfortunately, the issue of investment in our country has been weakened and undermined. Not enough has been done. Since 10, 12 years ago, I've been warning against this, that this needs to be compensated. It's a long-term plan. And also improvement of the business atmosphere. We have asked for this, and officials are trying, and we have not had an eye-catching progress. But we know what we want. That's what matters. We know what we are looking for. And this is our plan. We need to do these things and try to achieve them. So that was a few points about the economy. Now, as for the future, let me make a statement. I believe that in order to provide for future, we require to be patient and we require stability. Patience and stability. We need to take strong steps. As he is also narrating in Arabic. One of the things that in the prayer we have asked for is that we take strong steps forward. We need to be patient at the same time. Of course, we have patient. People are patient in Iran. We have experienced this. We know that it's because of their faith, because of the religion and the belief that they have, because of the trust that they have in the establishment and the Islamic Republic. People are patient enough, and officials also, the authorities also need to, in a jihadist style way, to show this. I mean, they got to manage things in this way, worrying, concern, to be hesitating and flip-flopping. This is really harmful. Officials should avoid that. And you should also bear in mind that the great problem of our arch enemy, of course, the arch enemy is the U.S. The great problems that that we are facing in the United States, they cannot be compared to the problems we are facing. They are much, much worse than the problems we are facing. I mean, Americans themselves, you know, they're beleaguered by all those problems, issues. You know, there is this, the gap has widened among different blocks of people there, the racial discrimination, and you can see what's happening. It's there, and it's involved everyone, and they're standing against the U.S. They have formed ranks against the administration. They have unsolvable economic issues. They have 45 million jobless people. This is important. It's really surprising to see that. And also the managerial issues that they have, you know, the mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic. These are the problems that America is facing. And the way that police is dealing with it, the police brutality is also a management-related problem. I mean, the local authorities are acting in such a way they cannot prevent a police officer from acting so savagely right before people's eyes on the streets to torture somebody to death. I mean, they can't stop it. I mean, they cannot stop a cop from doing that. And this indicates the grave problems that they are facing, that America is being hated all over the world. It's isolated. And we have, but maybe they make a repression, maybe they're able to, what's happening on the streets of the United States, maybe they can quell that, but for some time, it's transient, you know, it will remain like ash, and it will be in flames again another time. So this will make the establishment there in the U.S. collapse one day. It's a wrong one, you know. It's the political and the raising the terror is a wrong one, but for wrong philosophies do not expose in 10 or 2 years. It takes a longer time, and that's what's happening now. So the U.S. is now confused. Of course, against us, they're always making statements wherever they go, and frequently they make statements against us, but that's on the surface. They just want to save face. At home, they are having their own domestic issues, and they're worried about their future. So, in my opinion, Americans are trying to find an enemy. Sometimes they mention Iran, sometimes they mention China, sometimes Russia. They want to create enemies. And I believe that America has no greater enemy than its own people. I mean, now the American regime is facing the greatest enemy at home, the people, American people themselves. And that's the enemy that will bring the U.S. administration to its knees. And the problem America has with us is that they can neither erase us nor make us surrender. That's the problem that the U.S. has with us. And they're trying to make us surrender or simply wipe us off, and they cannot do either one, so that's why they are angry. So I believe that patience, steadfastness, resistance, and jihadist-style management is what we should do. This government also, this is the end of the government, 10-year and the 7 years, they have done whatever they could to the best of their ability. And later on, there will be another government, and hopefully they can also push things forward more seriously. And some parts of the government at this time have really done great work. There are some sectors have done a great job. Now, you cannot generalize to all sectors, but in some areas, they have really done great things. Therefore, by seeking the divine assistance, hopefully we'll push things forward, we'll move forward, and the people of Iran will emerge victorious. And I just want to make one statement regarding the morning months of Muharram. For some time, somebody's mentioning something about the months of Muharram. Well, the mourning should be done in a way. So what I want to emphasize is that in the mourning ceremonies, what matters is what the health specialists tell us to do. We have this national task force to fight the coronavirus. So I personally would do whatever they instruct. So my recommendation, and I'm emphasizing this, all those people who want to have mourning ceremonies at different religious centers, different people involved, my recommendation for them would be, whatever you want to do, you got to listen to them. We have this national task force against the coronavirus. If whatever limitations they have or protocols they have, it's incumbent upon all of us to abide by it. This is nothing trivial. This is really important. And God forbid if we have been observing health protocols. If we don't take it seriously, then there will be a disaster, and that disaster cannot be compensated for. Hopefully, Almighty God will help us, but the Imam Mahdi will also help us, as he has always been helping us, and hopefully the pure souls of the martyrs and the late Imam Khomeini will also pray for us, and we could see the success of the Iranian people. And that's the end of this speech.